Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Cindy Gross, your host and warrior. Welcome to the last show of 2016, live of Cindy's Corners Radio Show. Tonight, we're going to feature two very strong topics, very timely topics. When I booked the show originally, I wanted this to be one of happiness and remembrance of a true American hero for the holiday week. But the past few days have brought so much news that disturbs me personally and many of my audience members personally that we had to add guests that are involved in what is going on at the United Nations. So you are going to have one of happiness from a leader who brought all of us a feeling of pride of being Americans. For my opening statement tonight, my first political prediction for 2017 that I will discuss is something that is really going to play a big part in 2017, and that is redefining the unions. Do you belong to a union? Many of you do not. So when you hear about bias in the news about unions, you probably turn a deaf ear. However, if you buy clothes, eat food, travel, go to school, pay taxes, drive cars, take public transportation, I think you're getting the picture. Unions affect your daily routines, affect your pockets, and you are involved in unions through your tax dollars. Many of you voted for Donald Trump, even union members, because of the changes he plans to improve in our quality of life and international security and status. Many of the issues on the 100-day agenda and Republican National Committee platforms will change the definition of the modern-day union as we know it. Look at the choices for cabinet members, from the Secretary of State, through the many advisors and ambassadors and the people that are involved in commerce and in our treasury. Trump's recent tweets and subsequent meetings and agreements with the heads of Boeing and Hewlett-Packard and his saving jobs at Carrier are putting union bosses that are in power into feeling of jeopardy and conflict. Randy Weingarten, head of the American Federation of Teachers, and the earliest endorser of Hillary Clinton, has been one of the most vocal critics of President-elect Donald J. Trump, and one who seems that has the most to lose. Weingarten played the woman card, the racist card, the immigration card, the electoral college vote card, and falsely claims that the United States does not spend enough money on each child card to try and rally her members. She is a perfect example of a leader of a union that no longer connects with those she leads and claims to work with. That became apparent as many of the AFT members endorsed Bernie Sanders during the primary season, and way more educators voted for Donald J. Trump and other Republican and conservative elected officials than ever before. Betsy DeVos, Trump's choice for Secretary of Education, is pro-school choice and charter schools, and promises to end Common Core. Candidates for state and local offices researched costs in schools and found we still spend more per student than any other country in the world. Classrooms in places like China can seat more than 50 students in a class and still outperform American students on examinations and job preparations. Weingarten, like many of our other union leader peers, no longer represent a message most of America can relate to. While they seem to live celebrity lifestyles, many of their members still struggle paying their household expenses. Their message of bias and hate turn family members and friends against each other. At least they try to. Imagine being a spouse of a teacher and a policeman in New York, especially in the neighborhood of Eric Garner or in the Baltimore community where Freddie Gray, the incident took place there. Unions were started in the early 1900s as an organization providing power in numbers after the Triangle Fire Factory and other incidents where people's lives were at stake and they were overworked and underpaid. Today's union leaders seem more concerned about social issues like illegal immigration and legal marriage over actually protecting its own members and producing quality goods and a marketplace that has good prices and service for all. Unions have to and will be redefined under the Trump administration starting in 2017. Trump's team will end Obamacare and thus healthcare for union members will change. Trump's advisors in the business community will touch on every issue with unions. My guess, they will compromise and work together since union leaders in particular have the most to lose. Unions will rethink their cost as in staff positions and offerings. Since it is now apparent that many union members no longer want to vote for their union choices for elected officials, unions are going to have to rethink its dues and elections on all levels. The Democratic Party, filled with many minority groups, take for granted that members of unions automatically vote for them. As more African Americans, Hispanics, and Jews vote Republican and conservative, particularly in cities like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Miami, unions will have to address the actions and message of President-elect Trump, Vice President-elect Pence, and the leadership of the United States of America come January 20th, 2017. No matter how many ways unions will try to undermine the American people, they won't win. Take a look at Wisconsin's history with the people like Scott Walker, Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, and, of course, Donald J. Trump. My prediction for 2017, watch for the redefinition of American unions. And that is my opening statement. And it couldn't be more timely to discuss thinking about how we spend money than having on my first guest, Attorney Lawrence Hill, who started a grassroots campaign about defunding the United Nations. Are you there?
I am. Thank you very much.
Good evening, and please introduce yourself and your group that you have started, Grassroots, to my audience.
Yes, thank you. We've started a group, Time to Stop Funding the UN. It's on Facebook under Stop Funding the United Nations. And the reason we've done that is that the United Nations has become a complete farce over the last number of years. It's lost whatever moral compass it may ever have had, as well as its legitimacy, and has long outlived its avowed purpose. The United States funds approximately $8 billion of the UN's annual budget, and we believe it's time to stop doing so and to end the hypocrisy that has characterized this failed institution. The United Nations has failed miserably on numerous fronts, including where its intervention has been most needed. It's failed to intervene to stem genocidal regimes. It's failed to act against the spread of Islamic terrorism, and it's failed to protect the rights of women and children and minorities. Instead, it's become a global institutionalized racist mechanism for the spread of virulent anti-Semitism and the fallacious denigration and attempted delegitimization of the State of Israel. It's completely failed in its mission and is bereft morally. Accordingly, it's time, we believe, to stop funding the organization and to have it disbanded. For example, from April to July of 1994, members of the Hutu ethnic majority in Rwanda murdered as many as 800,000 people, mainly of the Tutsi minority, and the UN throughout that entire process stood silent. It did nothing. In 2003 to 2010, while the Sudanese military killed an estimated 300,000 civilians, the UN virtually did nothing. It took them 3 years to finally send a paltry 200 soldiers to the area. Earlier on, from 1975 to 1979, you might recall the Khmer Rouge regime in Cambodia. It killed an estimated 2.5 million Cambodians while the UN did nothing other than recognize the Khmer regime as the legitimate government of Cambodia. And from 1983...
Finish this, and then I want to ask you another question. Go ahead.
Okay, sure.
Finish your last statement.
I think that the point is that the UN has done things like, for example, last year elected China, Cuba, Russia, and Saudi Arabia to the Human Rights Council. Each of these nations is known for its egregious human rights abuses. And most recently, they've lauded Fidel Castro no less than three separate times. And as you know, he was a reviled dictator and one of the worst human rights violators of the latter half of the 20th century. In the past decade, the UN has passed 224 resolutions condemning Israel and only eight condemning the murderous Syrian regime. And last year alone, the UN adopted 20 resolutions against Israel and only three resolutions against the rest of the world combined. And so to single out one country that is the only democracy in the Middle East is nonsensical and speaks of really a racist manner in which the organization functions.
Well, you really gave our audience a great history and a great font of information, but first let me formally introduce you to the audience. This is Lawrence Hill. He's an attorney in New York. Please tell my audience a little bit about your background and how you decided, what was the breaking point that made you start this brand new grassroots group?
Well, I'm a partner at a major international law firm and specializing in litigation, and generally tax-related litigation. I've been very actively involved in some organizations, including an organization known as the Lawfare Project, which is a human rights organization that basically protects institutions from discrimination, including discrimination by what's known as the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions group that targets Israelis and Jews around the world for discrimination. I think what finally did it for me, I've been watching the UN and its hypocrisy for quite a number of years, but the recent failure of the United States to vote against a measure that was biased and anti-Israeli led me to conclude that it was finally time to begin a movement to try to defund the United Nations. Because it has, as I said, unfairly picked on Israel. Last year, it named Israel as one of the elite, as the only state in the entire world to discriminate against women, which is ludicrous because Golda Meir was one of the first elected female heads of state. Their justice minister is a woman. Leading doctors and lawyers and professors and scientists in Israel are women. Women fight in the military. In fact, there are more Air Force pilots in Israel than women who have driver's licenses in Saudi Arabia. So while, you know, women are being murdered and hung because they're in some of these the regimes such as Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan, they may be raped, but as a result of the rape, they're accused of adultery and they get murdered. The UN is not focusing on any of that. It's not focusing on trafficking of women sex slaves by ISIS or any of those grave abuses. It's focusing on Israel, which has an unbelievable human rights record when it comes to women. So the most recent abstention by the United States in the UN vote caused me to form this organization.
Well, you brought up a couple of great points that I wanted to share. You might be a new listener, but the listeners who have been following know that I was a couple of weeks ago speaking at a rally at the UN with John Bolton, and I've been very involved with the BDS movement with many groups. And you brought up a great point when you discussed it, particularly with the women's issues. My listeners have been contacting me and my followers that this is not a Jewish issue. Today was an act of vengeance against the president-elect. No other lame duck president or secretary of state has ever acted this way 2 weeks before leaving office. What is your opinion on that?
Well, I agree completely with that. It is unprecedented for a lame duck president to be issuing executive orders, to be changing what has been U.S. policy for the last 40 years in terms of Israel, and not only going against the will of the American people, but the will of Congress and the Democratic Party. The leaders of the Democratic Party, including Senator Schumer, have come out strongly against the United States' abstention in that UN vote. So you have a president who is usurping his authority and acting against the will of the country when he's a few weeks out of office. It's unprecedented. It's disturbing. And frankly, it's scary.
And then a half hour after that, President Obama, on vacation in Hawaii, had breaking news that he's going to retaliate against Russia. So within an hour, he's retaliating against Israel and Russia for things that are so beyond the scope of false facts and stupidity other than a lost ego. So it's just amazing how today turned out to be so full of news. But I will tell you, I am not surprised at all by any of this. We both know David Friedman. He spoke about this the night before the election when we weren't even sure whether or not Donald Trump was going to win. We've heard this from people like Ambassador Bolton and many of the fair and biased people that have been following this. And they think that there might be more to come. Do you see anything happening before January 20th?
Well, there's concern that there will be. There have been reports that the United States is going to try to impose a two-state solution when there's a meeting in Paris over the next couple of weeks that Israel has refused to attend. There is talk of, on Martin Luther King Day, Obama making an announcement in support of this. But in order to do that, he needs the cooperation of other countries involved. And I've read reports, and I don't know how credible they are, that Russia is having misgivings not only about having voted in favor of the recent UN resolution, but about supporting this latest action that Obama is alleged to be involved with. So definitely very concerned about what else he might do over the next couple of weeks, but hopefully it won't come to fruition.
Right, but even just the discussion of this, and you also brought up the BDS, the Boycott, Divest, Sanctions movement. A lot of these issues, because of the fact that even though this has been ongoing now for over a decade, in the realms of things, it hasn't been as successful as people like Obama and terrorist groups would have liked. So these resolutions and this speech today by Kerry and further actions will actually strength in the fact that the BDS movement won't be necessary because these, by delegitimizing Jerusalem, by putting in these resolutions, all of a sudden all these people are going to be looked at differently around the world, and the anti-Semitism will increase, the anti-Christian view will increase. So it's really a very harsh, harsh statements that are coming out of there. Do you know any more information about that?
Well, the UN resolution is extremely disturbing. The Palestinians, Hamas, and the other terrorists are celebrating it, and they are hailing it as the beginning of the destruction of Israel, and they're claiming that they're going to be suing soldiers in the international courts by the thousands who engaged in activities in the so-called West Bank. It's going to buoy the BDS movement on college campuses where professors and anti-Israel members of organizations such as Students for Justice in Palestine will be able to cite the UN resolution and try to claim that Israel has illegally occupied Arab lands, which it has not, and has illegally built settlements, which under international law it has not. But this certainly has very, very troubling ramifications for Israel, for the peace process. And the scariest part is it is one individual's goal, not the United States' goal, but this is the mission of Obama and Obama himself. And Obama has shown himself to be the enemy of our friends and the friend of our enemies. He supported Iran. He's given them the keys to the nuclear arsenal. He claimed that ISIS was a JV squad when in fact it was not, as we have learned, and has proliferated throughout the Middle East. And he had done very little until recently to try to stem the flow. And now he is changing U.S. policy, or attempting to change U.S. policy for the last 40 years, and coming out against Israel, including Kerry's ridiculous offensive speech today. And so this is how dangerous this individual is, just a few weeks away from office. I'm hopeful that, you know, Trump will come in, and he's indicated he will, and he will restore some stability, and he will strongly support Israel. I'm hoping that Congress is going to hold hearings on this, which the American Jewish Congress and other Jewish organizations have encouraged, and that we will be encouraging through our group. But it is unprecedented the kind of damage that one lame duck president has been able to exact in just his last couple of weeks in office.
Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us. Please tell us again where we can find you, the name of the group, and how, if anybody needs to get in touch with you directly, please let them know how they can do it.
Sure. On Facebook, if you just search for Stop Funding the UN, you will find our group. And that's probably the easiest way to do it. You can also, if you would like, email me at l.hill, H-I-L-L, 1010 at yahoo.com, and be happy to assist.
I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, because my next guest is also going to be discussing this. He was one of the featured speakers at today's rally in front of the UN. So, Lawrence Hill, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to working with you and trying to end this mess, because it's not
okay,
just Jews, it's not just Americans that are affected. It's around the world people. So thank you so much.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. My next guest, as I said, was one of the featured speakers at a huge rally today held in front of the United Nations. And he has been a guest on our show before. He is our good friend. He ran against Jerry Nadler in New York City for a congressional seat, and has, even though he did not win, he has remained strong and vocal on pro-American, pro-Israel issues. Welcome, Phil Rosenthal, to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Cindy. It is always a great pleasure to be here.
Well, Phil, I heard today was a smash. The activism, the support from people on the streets in front of the United Nations was enthusiastic. They were angry. They were vocal. They were concerned, and they want to take action. So fill us in a little bit about the event today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Cindy. Well, you know, people around the country really are up in arms about this. This resolution, even though people had heard the president might do this, it goes clearly against the will of a broad spectrum of Americans, Republican and Democrat included. And so people are just angry and wanted to let so this rally developed, the Jewish Voice sponsored it, and people wanted to let the administration know and let the U.N. know how angry you are, and that the U.N. has to be stopped. It's not doing anything to further U.S. national security. It's become basically a cesspool where they just go after Israel again and again and again. It's dangerous for Israel. It's dangerous for our national security. And people want to change, and the president-elect wants to change. So hopefully we'll see that very soon.
Well, Phil, tell us exactly what were some of the talking points today about what people want to do and how they're going to engage in action.
Well, I think the talking points was that this was just a complete betrayal of Israel, a stab in the back. It is incomprehensible that the U.S. and the U.N. could be focused on bashing Israel when you have, you know, hundreds of thousands dying in Syria, just a couple hundred miles away. When the whole Middle East is on fire, the one place with stability, with a democracy, is Israel, and that's what we're going after. People were very concerned with this whole concept of settlement. That is the fact that a Jew lives in the place where Jews have lived in Judea and Samaria for millennia. Peaceful Jewish community. You know, how is that a settlement that is somehow an obstacle to peace? And so people are really demanding first that this Obama administration, that is in its waning minutes, that it not cause any more harm and not try to box in the president-elect anymore. You know, there's great fear that with a peace conference, a so-called peace conference being hosted by France on January 15th, that people who are not really part, Israel's not going to be a part of it, that some countries will get together and just declare what they want to have happen, and then there's a concern that the Obama administration will come to the UN just a day or two before President Trump takes office and try to ram through another Security Council resolution against Israel and against our interests.
So you have been on top of everything going on since the day you announced your candidacy, through the primaries, through the election process. And you were in the headlines last week because of some statements made by Congressman Nadler. Please share with my audience what is going on in your particular district where you were running and about Jerry Nadler and what is going on with the Democratic Party.
Sure. So in this issue, of course, the Democrats, at least there's still some left that are trying to support Israel and are very upset about this resolution. But they didn't mobilize to stop the president early enough, and that's what they need to do. But beyond that, what Jerry Nadler did, he had a town hall where he basically is part of a Democrat mobilization to try to make the incoming administration fail before it starts. And there's all these plans developing on how to just stonewall any legislation. And so it's very damaging. You know, we need to have one president. All Americans want to make sure this one president succeeds. and this Not My President movement against the president-elect is just really bad for the country. We have to succeed together.
You also came out with 10 points, but would you mind, because you have so much to say on all these issues, would you mind staying on for, we have to take a brief commercial and come back and discuss your 10 points?
I would love to. Thank you.
Okay. Stay tuned for a brief commercial, and we'll have more from Phil Rosenthal and today's event at the United Nations.
Madison's Constitutional Protection Corporation and Open Rebellion Radio are proud to announce a new show, The Voice of Reason, with your host, Michael Murphy, senior staff writer with Madison's, will air at an internet connection near you each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Central. Each week, we will take a look at some of the top issues and stories in the news, and then take a look at specific subjects and events in depth. Always at the forefront will be the Constitution, the Republic, and our responsibilities as we try to help steer the nation back to foundational principles. It is not for us to expect Congress or a president to do our job. George Washington said, "The Constitution of the United States, its only keepers, the people." Likewise, when Ben Franklin was asked what sort of government they had given, he replied, "A republic, if you can keep it." Keep is a verb, and a verb requires action. The mission of Madison is to articulate how and why the Constitution is an asset for all. It is never a liability. Please join us each week and become a partner in this effort.
Welcome back to Cindy's Corners Radio Show. I'm Cindy Gross, your host and your warrior. And we're back with congressional candidate and proud American and patriot, Phil Rosenthal. Phil, are you there?
I am still here. Glad to be here.
Well, tell us a little bit. You wrote a brilliant piece that has been shared in a lot of the press in the metropolitan tri-state area and probably internationally through websites and social media about 10 points that we really have to look to in 2017. Can you share a little bit about them with the audience?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And my key point is that this resolution that's said to be just about is so much more damaging than that in many other ways, and people don't realize that. It claimed almost to change international law. Israel has many claims to settle that land, and it suddenly declares that this is all a flagrant violation of international law. Jerusalem, which both parties want to have remain undivided, both have said that. It just declares Jerusalem, even the Temple Mount, the Western Wall, the Jewish quarter, all are now illegally occupied Palestinian territory. So that was a huge change. Beyond that, it encourages BDS, the boycott, divest, and sanction movement against Israel. And the UN is even preparing a list of companies in Israel to make it easier to have a boycott. And that is a horrible thing and could hurt Israel economically and militarily in many ways. There were other subtle things. The resolution declared the settlements were an obstacle to peace, but didn't say that about terrorism. It mentioned terrorism, but clearly, somehow the only obstacle is settlements, which is absolutely crazy. You know, it ignored the real obstacles that Palestinians will kill children in their sleep in their homes, and then the government, the Palestinian Authority, celebrates it and pays money to the terrorists. The resolution also marginalized the United States and its future role in bringing peace to the Middle East. It talked about France and Egypt and Russia by name, not the United States by name. So again, it just memorialized the increasing irrelevance of America in the Middle East, and that has to change. This resolution said every 3 months there has to be a report to the Security Council. So as if the UN does not demonize Israel enough. Let's do it more. There'll be more UN pressure. Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Sydney.
I was going to say, first of all, I don't think John Kerry ever spoke, including during his 2004 campaign, unsuccessful campaign running for president, as long as he spoke at the United Nations or in a tone that he spoke. And what was quite amazing was not Jewish press, not pro-Israel advocates, but from all sections, non-Jewish, women, minorities, Democrats, pointing out all the misrepresentations, all the facts that were outright lies. One of the biggest lies of all he spent a lot of time discussing was the amount of money that Israel gets from America. What most Americans, most people internationally don't realize is that this was not, I'm just handing you the money, Israel, and that's it. There are document after document of information regarding the monies that go to Israel and what Israel has to do in order to get that money and what kind of business relationships they have to have with America and around the world and what else is expected of them. So can you point out some of the other things that you found to be factually incorrect or that people were, what, you know, upset with?
Well, you know, where to begin? You know, the people forget the value of what we get from Israel, and when it when we provide a little bit of military aid, look at the missile defense program that Israel has. You know, we have a growing threat from missiles from ultimately to be nuclear missiles from Iran, from North Korea, and the only place that really is testing it, unfortunately, Israel has to test it on a regular basis, is the anti-missile defense that Israel has. And just this idea, you know, this idea that Secretary Kerry has that somehow, you know, bashing Israel is the way you're going to get to peace. And if you don't just bash it a little harder, then it never could be a two-state solution. When the reality is the problem throughout the history of the modern state of Israel is that the Palestinians are offered again and again their own state, whether it be at the founding of Israel when the UN handed it to them and they instead went to war. You know, through 2000, 2001, 2008, they're offered a state, they reject it. So hit Israel a little harder, what can they do? We offer it again. You know, when Israel, everyone forgets, unilaterally pulled out of Gaza, got nothing for it, didn't ask anything for it. And that is a Palestinian state. Is there peace? No. There's Hamas firing thousands and thousands of rockets at Israeli population centers. And so the whole narrative is just backwards, that the only chance for peace is to get rid of or stop the settlements. And you know, Cindy, if I could, I wanted to make a point about the settlements too. That why is it? First, what is a settlement? Right, it's a Jewish community, synagogues. That's a settlement. Why is that said to be an obstacle to peace? What's wrong with there being a Jewish community? Well, the challenge comes because the Palestinian Authority has declared that Jews will not be allowed to live in any eventual Palestinian state. So,
and he was very accurate in trying. Wait, he was just. I just want to. This is important. He was trying to say that Jews would be welcome in Palestinian states, where we've seen time and time again, and there are loads of charts how the populations within the past decade of thousands and hundreds of thousands of Jews have come down to hundreds down to single digits. So Jews are not allowed to live in Palestinian states.
Absolutely. And we see that. We've seen the history throughout the Arab world where there's hundreds of thousands of refugees from back when Israel was created. And, you know, no one has complained about that. And Jewish refugees. And then the head of the Palestinian Authority, Abbas, has said, not a Jew will be allowed to live in the so-called Palestinian state. He has made it clear. How could Secretary Kerry say otherwise? And what that means is, oh, then if you create such a state and Jews are living there, they have to be forcibly moved. Well, that's, no one wants that. That's hard. But that would not, there'd be no issue if he said, well, Israel has nearly 2 million Arabs living in the country. We could have Jews living in the country. Yeah, so the reason that this idea that Jews living somewhere might create a challenge is only because the Palestinian Authority says, oh, well, we have to get rid of them all. And then the UN, the wonderful UN that just stands for peace and tolerance, accepts it. Of course the Palestinians can get rid of all the Jews. Why is that acceptable?
Well, I'm so glad that you came on the show tonight. You were on my first show. You were on my last show of 2016. I have a feeling you'll be on shows during 2017 because you not only speak about Jewish issues, you speak about issues that concern people who are living in cities. Your constituents, I'm with you plenty of times in person, you got more votes than anybody else for one of them in a election against one of the longest sitting Congress people. And your name is out there as someone to watch during the Trump administration and working with state, local, and federal elected officials. So, Phil Rosenthal, thank you so much for coming on. Where can my listeners find you, follow you, and get involved with the activities and engage in the activism that you are partaking in?
Oh, sure. Thank you. You know what? There is a great Facebook group that I am going to pull up for you right now. And it is simply facebook.com/drphilipjrosenthal, R-O-S-E-N-T-H-A-L. It's basically Dr. Philip J. Rosenthal. So it's facebook.com/drphilipjrosenthal. And please follow us there. Send us notes there. And there'll be more coming because I just became the Vice President for Jewish Affairs for the New York County Republican Committee. And we're going to be organizing, boy, the many Jews around the New York area who feel betrayed right now. But you know, all Americans have been betrayed by this. And so please, everyone, get involved. And I look forward to working with you all. And thank you, Cindy. You are
and
the
I
best.
And I look forward to seeing you.
Same here.
I look forward. It's a mutual fan club here. And I hope to see you before 2017 actually comes Saturday. And I look forward to working with you on trying to solve the problems of all Americans, of all humanitarians internationally. Because I know today, I got more calls from non-Jews concerned about what happened today than Jews. So this is something that's upsetting everybody, and I can't thank you enough. And listeners, we're going to take a brief commercial, and we'll be right back. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Cindy. Have a wonderful night.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with a beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonsCPC.com, MadisonsCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Welcome back to the show. Now we're going to a topic that most of you were very excited about when it was first announced, honoring Ronald Reagan with an author of a brand new book. Gene, are you there?
Cindy, yes, I've been following that other number for half an hour.
Well, welcome to the show. I want to first have you introduce yourself and the name of the book, and then I'm going to ask you a question before we get into the details of the book. So introduce yourself and tell everybody the title of the new book that you wrote about everybody's hero, Ronald Reagan.
Cindy, thank you very much. It's Reagan's 1968 Dress Rehearsal, Ike, RFK, and Reagan's Emergence as a World Statesman.
Okay, and tell everybody the correct pronunciation of your name so we don't get it wrong.
Gene Copelson, Copelson. And by the way, the book is available at Amazon.
Great. I wanted to, I don't know if you've been hearing, but we've been talking a lot about all the events that happened today at the United Nations, John Kerry's, Obama's reaction with Russia, and you wrote a book, but what's exciting about your book is that a lot of new facts are coming out about our hero, Ronald Reagan, regarding both parties and many leaders, but one of them has to do with the United Nations and Israel. So please share with us as we get into learning more about the book and the timeliness of this topic, share with us what you learned and what you wrote about in your book regarding the United Nations and Ronald Reagan.
Well, this is a part of history that has never been written about before. Ronald Reagan in the 1960s, as many people know, was first elected governor of California. But there's a whole aspect to his term when he began politics, and that's in the arena of international affairs. He ran for president for the first time in the late 1960s, and he had a hidden political advisor who advised him on both domestic politics as well as world affairs, and that was Dwight Eisenhower. And my book highlights Reagan's emergence as a world statesman during this period, the man who became President Reagan, and all the triumphs he achieved in domestic policy and in world affairs actually almost all originated in the mid to late 1960s. And the one specific example, very, very relevant to today's headlines, is that shortly after the Six-Day War in June of 1967, Reagan addressed this subject head-on when he went to a convention of young Republicans in Omaha, Nebraska, and was just enthusiastically received. He, in fact, polled higher than all the other Republican candidates during this time, including Richard Nixon, George Romney, and Nelson Rockefeller. And at that speech, he specifically addressed the Six-Day War. He said two critically important things, very, very relevant to today. Number one, he was very concerned that the Johnson administration, that is Democratic President Lyndon Johnson, would try to strike a fair balance between the Arabs and the Israelis. And Ronald Reagan said no, that America had a moral obligation, a moral duty to side with the one shining democracy in the Middle East, Israel. And also, he said that whatever problems existed, which at that time was between the Arab states, Egypt, Syria, and Jordan, and Saudi Arabia and Israel versus the main problems today of the Palestinians in Israel, he said that the solution was not to go to the United Nations as presently constructed. He felt that the small nations there had way too much power and influence, and that the only way to reach a settlement was direct negotiation.
Well, that's so fascinating how planned this a couple of weeks ago, and that it could not have been a more timely topic for you to come on today, because I was one of the people who helped organize and get people to the United Nations today to voice their disgust and anger about what's been going on, exactly at the same time that Kerry gave the probably longest speech of his political career, filled with anger and lies and resentment, that was like a sore loser from November 8th and just didn't know how to deal with it. So it was truly, truly, truly timely that you discussed that. How did you get involved in writing the Ronald Reagan book?
Well, I very much view the age of Ronald Reagan, the 1980s, as a golden age for America and for the world. Reagan's main achievements, he creates a major American growing economy, creating 25 million true jobs. He defeats communism without firing a shot. This was a golden age for the country and for the world. And I wanted to learn how and why he first decided to run for president. People know that he was elected in 1980, and some people may remember that in 1976 he ran against incumbent Republican President Gerald Ford. But I bet very, very few of the people listening have any idea that he actually ran in 68. That campaign began shortly after he won the California governorship in the fall of 66. And I document this, which has never been described before. I interviewed 35 Reagan grassroots activists across the country who manned his campaign offices at that time period. And what people don't know is that, yes, Richard Nixon becomes the nominee. We know that. It's history, after all. But Richard Nixon only wins the GOP nomination that summer of 68 in the wee hours of the morning when the convention finally gets up to the letter W for Wisconsin. And he barely ekes out the victory of only 25 votes more than needed. What everyone in the background was hoping was that Reagan would stop Nixon on the first ballot. And had that occurred, there were many, many delegates who could not wait to vote for Ronald Reagan on the second ballot. Most were obligated due to state law to vote for Nixon on that first ballot, but they were never enthusiastic about Richard Nixon. It was Ronald Reagan who conservative Republicans just could not wait to vote for. And I tell that story, but during my research, I learned actually more important information for history, and that is during this era, Reagan had a hidden political advisor, I mentioned earlier, who advised him on domestic politics and on world affairs, and this was Dwight Eisenhower. People say, what could possibly Ronald Reagan have to do with Dwight Eisenhower? After all, Reagan's elected president in 1980. Doesn't Ike just spend the 1960s golfing and become ill and pass away? Well, all the details of how Ike influenced Ronald Reagan are described for the first time in my book, which I know people have been most fascinated by. And another important aspect is that Ronald Reagan in the 1960s had a major public political enemy, and that of all people was Robert F. Kennedy. People don't associate Ronald Reagan and Robert F. Kennedy, but my book goes into detail about how this was a major political antagonistic relationship of that era.
Well, I have to tell you, Gene, you just brought up something that I lived through during the summer. I was at the July convention, and you talk about how on the floor they were talking about how the first ballots, the second ballots. Again, we could relate to it this year because that sort of came up with Unbound the Delegates. And many of my listeners are staunch conservatives, big Ted Cruz fans, including myself, Mike Lee, and I personally know Kendall Unruh. So I know all about this. And again, everybody was relating to a lot of the events that you are mentioning here, but that if you're not a delegate or if you're not a political junkie, you really don't know about it. So that that history took place again during this election, and it's just a great overlap. So you're talking about things that brought back great memories of the summer for me, although now I follow Ted Cruz and I support my president-elect full-heartedly. I think he is going to be an awesome president, and I am proud that I will be at the inauguration and participating in some of the events of the inauguration week and supporting him, especially after things today. Any last thoughts you can share before we close our show tonight?
There are a number of aspects of that time period in Ronald Reagan. He began his pushing for an anti-ballistic missile shield to defend America, not in the middle of the 1980s, but in the late 60s. And it wasn't him calling to Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall, in the mid-80s that came out of the clear blue. Ronald Reagan actually multiple times in public when he ran for president in 67 and 68 called to tear down the Berlin Wall. And thus many precedents that people associate later with President Reagan began during this first quest for the presidency in the late 60s. And the fact that behind the scenes was Dwight Eisenhower and that in public Ronald Reagan was fighting Robert F. Kennedy will just amaze readers of this book, Reagan's 1968 Dress Rehearsal.
Tell everybody again where they can find it and where they can find you should they have any questions.
Yes, my website is Gene, G-E-N-E, Copelson, K-O-P-E-L-S-O-N.com, and it's available at Amazon either as a physical book or as a Kindle version for your tablet or laptop.
I just want to tell you one other thing. I loved when we had our initial discussion because I was fortunate to be a part of the College Republicans for the Reagan campaigns in 80 and 84, and I was very lucky that Ronald Reagan made history when he spoke as only one of two sitting presidents in a Jewish synagogue while he was a sitting president and while he was running in 84, and I was lucky to be in that audience. And I am lucky that I know personally the future ambassador from the United States to Israel, who the rabbi's son is, David Friedman. So this book just had so many personal ties for me. It's a quick read, but very informative, full of factual information. And it's a great way to say Happy New Year to everybody. And let's hope that we have a lot to look forward to in 2017, and this book will help us look forward to a lot of good things for us as Americans, as conservatives, as Republicans, as patriots, as constitutionalists, and everything that Ronald Reagan stood for to make us proud people. So thank you so much. I will have one short commercial, and we'll come back with closing remarks. Thank you, Gene.
Cindy, thank you.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard and the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs, but you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel, and best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for, and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Hello, welcome back. Again, I'm Cindy Gross, your host and warrior. I have one more political prediction of 2017, and really based on the actions and the words of today, it couldn't be more timely. So it's going to be my closing statement of 2016. My last political prediction of 2017 is there is a birth certificate like no other. Somehow, somewhere, and by someone other than Donald J. Trump, a birth certificate like no other will emerge. After January 20th and after the oath of office is officiated in front of billions through international live coverage, the most debated lost piece of information of the last 8 years will turn up, perhaps in a recovered email. Donald J. Trump, after winning the election on November 8th, turned his attentions to selecting cabinet members and trusting advisors to help make America great again. Actually, make America better than before. And boy, after the past couple of days, he has some job. He acted graciously when meeting the Obamas, despite Michelle demanding that protocol rules change and no formal picture be photographed and shared. He has said nothing negative, despite numerous criticisms from Barack Obama and Joe Biden. And Barack Obama even had the nerve to say that he could have won a third re-election. Where does he get that from? He spent more taxpayer money than any other, along with his wife, Michelle Obama, who, as sitting president and first lady, said seriously and in jokes that they have no hope. They were campaigning for all the Democratic nominees besides Hillary Clinton on state and local levels, and defended all the exposés and corruptions that went on, including those at the head of the DNC. He even made jokes about his own birth certificate and blew it off. Trump said that he personally would end the discussion of the birth certificate, but others never made such a claim. So my biggest prediction that someone not close to Trump will miraculously discover a birth certificate. The birth certificate will be researched carefully and validated to be the first legitimate document verifying the accurate information about the whereabouts of where President Barack Hussein Obama's birth took place, and answers the all of the mysteries of the whos, the whats, the wheres, the whens, the whys, and the hows. This will only validate by then President Trump's support and diminish the Democratic and Progressive Socialist parties more and more. And this is going to actually affect the candidates that come up for 2017 elections in both state and local levels. Where will this piece of paper be found? Your guess is as good as mine. My thoughts? It won't be from a Republican or a conservative. It won't be an elected official like Ted Cruz or even the Bush family members. It won't even be Evan McMullen, who ran as an independent for president. It will come from one or two arenas: a Democrat looking to change the current wave of decline of that party, or upset with the result, and then make themselves a hero to those still believing that the results of November 8th will miraculously change. I don't just mean for the presidency. I'm talking about the majority of Senate and House seats, the governorships, and the state legislators. Do you realize that in 8 years, Obama's been in office, over 100 seats have been lost in the House? Wow. Then again, perhaps it might come from outside the United States. After all, in the 8 years that Barack Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and Secretary of State Clinton and Kerry have been doing such a wonderful job of destroying multiple relationships internationally, those people have no problem focusing their efforts on working with President Trump, his cabinet members and staff members, while finding and exposing the truths about the Obamas. Obama destroyed relations for us all over the world. He increased ISIS and has now threatened Putin and Russia. Maybe it will come from Obama's own team, upset with what he's been doing now. Or maybe a brother who endorsed Donald Trump or another family member that we have yet to meet. Again, your guess is as good as mine. But one thing I know for sure, we have not heard the end of the Obama birth certificate. And that is my final political prediction for 2017. Ladies and gentlemen, Cindy's Corners radio show debuted in September. I want to thank all of you for calling in, writing in, following me, and making my show the number one show on the Madison's Media website for 2016. We promise you more great things in 2017. You can find me, Cindy Gross, G-R-O-S-Z, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find it at Cindy's Corners, Cindy's Corners on all those places, and on a website, www.cindyscorners.com. I personally answer everything that I can, and I try to accommodate all your questions and all your needs for what you want on our show, since it is considered the only alternative for lifestyle trends and news for the conservative Republican person who is pro-American, pro-patriotic, pro-conservative, and proud of our Constitution. Again, Cindy Scorner's radio show, Cindy Gross, G-R-O-S-Z. Everybody have a happy, healthy, and safe new year. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you in 2017 in person at live events and on the radio, on Blog Talk Radio, Cindy's Corners Radio Show. Good night.